You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of the To World of Hell radio show. I'm Joe Thrashenkill. With here, I've got the number one golden boy, 365 Days of Horror. You might know him as a... Hey, Jordan. How's it going, Jordan?
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah. You know, it's been a hell of a week. A lot of things happening.
The longest week, some people say.
Yeah. How have you been?
Doing okay. I purchased a car yesterday, so I am... calming down after like 3 months of having to search online and deal with stuff and, you know, worry about missing out on something I like and all the stomach and soul problems that come with making a massive purchase like a new car.
Well, congratulations on your new Skyline.
It's a nice Econoline. Drive cross country in that thing. I had actually been looking at some different stuff. I initially went to a Honda dealer earlier in the week because like my first car was a Civic. So I'm like, maybe I'll go back to that. And looked at a couple of different ones, some different models. And like one car, it was black and just had tons of scratches all over it, like deep scratches. Like, I'm not going to go with this one. Looked at another one. The back seat was all like chewed up, like an animal had chewed on it. And the front of the car on the glass dashboard, there was a little kid sticker on it. And I like of a dog. And I pointed it out to the guy showing it to me. And I'm like, is this custom? He's like, oh, you know, we could just scrape that off. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm not taking a car where you haven't even bothered to scrape off a sticker that's probably covering a crack or something like that.
Yeah. Now, when I was going to buy the pickup truck that I ended up with, the one that I looked at right before had a big wad of fucking dip in the floorboard of the car. Like some dickhead just put his finger between his lip and his cheek and pulled it out and just threw it on the fucking floorboard, and nobody bothered to like vacuum it up before trying to sell a car.
Like, you're gonna be showing these things at least do a cursory cleaning.
Yeah, it's tough to miss that one.
And eventually I walked out of the place because I'm like, okay, I think I like this, let me go with it. The price is a little high, but you know, we can work that out and meet somewhere in the middle. Nope, no negotiating. The price is what the price is. It's a dealership policy. And I was like, well, see you later.
So I know that our boy Breno, who's sadly not here with us today, he had said that, you know, he had worked as a dealer for a while and they didn't do any kind of negotiation either. And that's just like completely foreign to every car buying experience I've ever had. You have to connive and you're still going to get fucked.
Yeah, I go in expecting a little give and take.
Like, yeah.
Your car isn't really $23,000. We all both know that. Let's figure something out. And I'll feel like I'm getting a deal even though I know I'm not. I'm like, that's fine. But apparently it's becoming a new thing now that dealers are just not negotiating. And supposedly people like that, but I didn't like it and I walked out.
There's nothing I love more than getting a deal on something. Now, I have failed every single time I've tried to get a deal on a car. You know, I ended up, you know, just getting screwed another way on it. It's just, let me live through this thing that brings me joy. Let me argue with you over a price on something.
Let me feel like I accomplished something.
Yeah, exactly.
So I ended up going and getting an updated Santa Fe. It's a little bit big, but... you know, they worked with me. It was a good experience. You know, just got to get used to driving a little bit and I'll be happy.
It's a Hyundai?
Hyundai, yes.
Ah, okay. Yeah, it's a little bit bigger than a Civic, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I had an 03 Santa Fe before, so I'm kind of used to the bigger ones anyway. Going back to, like, test driving a Civic, I felt super low to the ground. And, like, the back window is really small. And I'm just like, this feels weird. I'm not comfortable with this all that much. So
every other vehicle on the road is now like, you know, you're traveling 6 feet up in the air, so you can't use small economy vehicles anymore.
It really is a big difference between going from, like you said, just a couple inches higher up on the ground than going back down to the low things. And it's just like, well, if a truck hits me, he'll probably see me. He won't drive for like 10 more miles with me in the front of his grill.
You hope. You genuinely hope, but you never know.
You never know. They are high on all of the things.
Well, that's exciting. Congratulations on getting your new vehicle.
Thank you.
I am just
not that I have anywhere to go.
Yeah, it seems like such an odd time to make a vehicle purchase, but I mean, this is the opportunity to do donuts in an abandoned parking lot. You know,
people, yeah, there aren't rules anymore. Just do whatever you want.
Exactly. That's the way I see it, anyway. And it seems like, you know, this crossover vehicle that you purchase is probably, you know, low enough to the ground that you won't immediately flip over and die than if you were to do it in a slightly larger SUV.
Well, if I that does happen, I'll make sure to go, whee! It's the only thing that makes me feel alive anymore.
Well, that's a pretty good one, though. So we've had a week, brother, I tell you.
Just reminds me that, remember when people used to say, like, fuck you, 2016, because, like, David Bowie died?
Yeah, man. No, man.
We had no idea.
Dude, so, like, Chadwick Boseman, was it?
Yeah.
He died, and I looked at Twitter, and then I saw Chuck Schumer tweeted, like, man, 2020 it sucks. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? You're one of the most powerful people in the world.
Yeah, I saw that too. That was odd. Perhaps it was the communications associate who runs the Twitter account thought he was on his instead of, you know, the Senate minority leader.
I would like to believe that. I'm sure it was written by a communications person regardless, but I think it was intentional.
Yeah, it probably was. I'll just benefit of the doubt, I suppose. But yeah, unless it's someone like Chuck Grassley who, like, instead of typing out B-E, puts in B and then the number 4 instead of F-O-U-R or something like that, you know someone else is running the account.
Grassley is an all-time tweeter.
He's just so bad. It's awesome. It's like, he's all of his, like, 89 years old. He's still using it.
I think this has stuck with me since, like, fucking 2013, which is how often I think about it. But Joe Walsh, not the Eagles guy, the guy that won't pay his child support, former politician.
Hashtag resistance, Joe Walsh.
Yeah, that fucking guy. He had a drunk night tweeting fucking 2013 or so, and one of the responses that he typed out, a full tweet, was whatever.
That's right.
And that, to me, is the perfect tweet.
That made him more human, I suppose. Because who hasn't been there?
Yeah, seriously. Well, you haven't, but everybody else.
And then there's Ted Cruz's account liking a porn tweet.
Oh, that was a good one. That was a really good one. There was a Talking Points memo guy tweeting out a lesbian porn scene in the middle of, like, a tweet thread about how Trump is bad or something like that.
Josh Marshall?
Yeah, that's the guy.
Oh, I missed that one.
He owned it. To his credit, he owned up to it immediately. He's like, sorry, I was multitasking.
Good for him. That's better than, what was it, Kurt Eichenwald, who took a screenshot and one of the tabs was, like, tentacle porn?
Yeah, and good lord, like, he went on a huge tweet storm explaining how actually he was trying to explain it was a joke between he and his kids and his wife, and they were trying to explain to his wife what tentacle. Dude, you're a creep. You're
just
into the tentacle.
Just own up to it.
Yeah.
Like, hell yeah, I was looking at it.
Good old Dirt Eichenwald. That motherfucker wrote The Informant. Like the movie that the book that became like the movie with Matt Damon.
Huh.
Anyway, I've completely lost the plot here. speaking of things that we do regrettably online, as you will know, there have been some protests around the country. I don't know if you've seen this or you've heard about this, but it's happening.
It depends on which medium you're reading or looking at, because some will be reporting it honestly, and others will talk about how New York City is completely bombed out and Portland, Oregon's destroyed and no white families are allowed anymore.
Oh my God. Yeah, I saw some guy saying that D.C. is uninhabitable anymore. And it's like, D.C. was uninhabitable before that, but it's for completely different reasons.
The responses to those things are always so funny when people get a hold of them. Like, oh, yes, I was only able to get a venti mocha latte at Starbucks. Send help. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess some people think that, you know, they can just say whatever and nobody will be like, I also live here and think you're full of shit. But, you know, I imagine this is a genre of antic that is not going to slow down anytime soon.
And it's always boosted by bot accounts and idiots running fake right-wing websites, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's cool. Get a lot of views on these chuckleheads. Now, I wanted to call out something I saw. I saw this yesterday afternoon, and it really stuck with me in a special way. I was seeing a thread of coverage of a Black Lives Matter protest in Pittsburgh yesterday. In this thread of the journalist covering it, he has video image of a group of people walking down the street and making arm motions at a guy with a camera as he, you know, walks quickly backwards to keep up with them with his handy cam. He said, of course, this band decided it was a good idea to film a music video using the protests as a backdrop. Now, I think it's kind of funny that this fairly, you know, small and unremarkable protests in Pittsburgh, out of that, this came out, because these guys, they now have a local following.
What a bad idea. Like, why wasn't anyone around to say, maybe we shouldn't?
Well, I will go ahead and paint a little word picture for the people at home. The vocalist of this band is a white person with dreadlocks.
No, get out of here.
If that gives you a better idea of what we're dealing with here, I hope that helps. The band, it was, I'd say within maybe an hour of this getting just a little bit of traction. Again, like, not a lot of traction. I think the original one had 70 retweets, so it's a fairly localized phenomenon. It was picked up that this band is called Sherov Nitsa. They are a local Pittsburgh band. They had gotten a write-up in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette just a few days before this for their release single, which is a Dead Can Dance cover, which is a strange thing to do, but here we are. Let's go ahead and listen to a little bit of that right now.
That's like something I would come across at 2 a.m. flicking channels and stopping on like the public access because, oh, there's a band on, let me check them out. And like that's what comes out of their amps and their microphone. It's just, it's bad. And you think it's a dream because you're kind of sleep-addled.
There is a there's a local attorney. He has billboards up everywhere. It's him wearing a leather jacket with his huge dreads. It's David Comey, the attorney that rocks. And, you know, occasionally people post, you know, these billboards and be like, what the fuck? And, you know, people everywhere are like, what the shit is this? David Comey is ubiquitous in the Central Texas area for these billboards. I once, just like 17 drinks deep, decided I would seek out his band on YouTube. And it sounds really similar to this.
Like faux creative and spiritual.
Yeah, there's something, I don't know. I don't understand the white person with dreadlocks demographic, but they clearly have some kind of spirituality that I lack. Maybe they were not cursed with the cruel Yakub like I was.
Maybe that and, you know, some peyote.
Could be. So, you know, some people were like, hey, maybe this wasn't such a good idea to use this this community outpouring of protests against the cheapening of black lives to promote your product. That a couple of people said something more or less like that, maybe more coherent than I'm able to do. Pierre Gallard, that'd be one of the fellows from this band, Sharovnitsa, made a statement regarding all this. Would you like me to read this for you?
See, I'm on their Facebook now, and there are two statements.
Oh, shit. Okay. The one that I see here is in a DM to a reporter.
So you could read that one first, and then maybe we can expand upon from the band itself.
Okay, that sounds good. Pierre here says, today we were shooting a video for a new song, Welcome to the First Day of the New World Order. The video is a social political commentary on our current New World Order as it is unfolding. The civil rights movement, COVID-19, pandemic stress, and our rights as citizens and need to maintain those rights to speak out against oppression are all covered in the lyrics of NWO and other songs to be released. We also specifically cut filming far away from the protests to avoid this exact accusation of using the protests as a backdrop. We were at the protests to support Black Lives Matter movement. We were asked to not film any protesters, but also it wasn't our intention to film any of them. The video is showing the cops only.
So that is this one of the statements on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
140 comments on it.
Here's that attention you wanted.
And remember how, was it like two shows ago, we talked about Werewolf Records and how they made a statement about Metal Archives labeling them as NSBM and how the guy was in the comments section responding.
Yep.
And how that's a terrible idea. Sharovnitsa didn't listen to that show because they're in the comments, but all they're responding with when people are dunking on them is, please read the statement again. And of course people respond to that with laughing likes and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's not a great answer.
People were like, did you ever consider asking? This is a ridiculously stupid idea. The organizers told you to go home. And it's all, please read the statement again.
Well, I read it again. My questions were answered, I suppose.
I mean, if it helps, they did come out with another statement.
Is it better this time?
It's better because they use the word apologize.
Okay, that's a start.
To follow up, and because this misunderstanding deeply grieves us, that's not how you start an apology, we also would like to say the following. We apologize formally and most sincerely for the misunderstanding during today's Civil Saturday demonstration. We have supported the demonstrations here in Pittsburgh from day one, and we did not mean at all to cause any alarm or distraction during our brief filming process. We all believe in the right to free speech and felt strongly about including Pittsburgh's support of BLM via the peaceful demonstrations that have occurred as a part of our song and video. Well, it's not your song, it's a cover song. Welcome to the first day of the New World Order. Because the new awareness raised, the changes we are pushing for, and how we enact those changes are all inextricably a part of our New World Order.
Does it... Maybe, and this is just maybe me nitpicking in a way, but the whole New World Order thing is definitely like a far right dog whistle.
Yeah, some of the language they're using is kind of been co-opted, and I don't think it really means as much as they think it does now.
Yeah, the whole vibe is very like 2002. The Ministry records where Al wrote them all about how George Bush sucks.
Mm-hmm.
As you'll remember, those records did not have a huge impact politically.
I mean, we're friends with the band Slaves BC, who are now called Ouzkost, or I think I'm pronouncing that right, and they're from Pittsburgh. Maybe we can get them on and maybe talk about this band a little bit and see if this is like indicative of Pittsburgh? Are there other bands like this, or are these just chuckleheads doing the most chucklehead thing possible?
I'd be curious to know that, because I really don't know anything about Pittsburgh. It's a cultural blind spot to me. So I'm down to do an anthropology expedition on this.
I know Pittsburgh has the Steelers, the Pirates, the Penguins.
Yeah.
They have the Rivers. They have sandwiches with French fries and coleslaw in them. Their quarterback for the past 15 years is a fat scumbag rapist.
Yeah, I know that. I know that much. That's where we're at.
People for years referred to it as Shittsburg, but apparently it's on the move. Pittsburgh's a city on the grow now, so maybe that's not the case anymore.
All right, well, let's, in a future episode, I'm making this commitment, we will learn more about Pittsburgh.
Maybe we could have Travnitsa on.
Yeah, that'll happen. That'll happen.
Yeah, right.
They should just
change their name at this point.
Yeah, they probably should. Apparently a member of this band used to be in Rusted Root, if that name means anything to you.
It does. And that makes so much sense now.
Yep. That's very much the aesthetic and the vibe, and things have not changed in a long time.
It's very much the white people with dreadlocks trying to change the world with positive thinking.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, I guess, striking to me in that you've had 90 days of a broad coalition of people in the streets advocating for change. And then these fucking 90s throwbacks show up to, like, try to co-opt this movement to promote themselves.
Yeah, the scene's not dead then, huh?
Yeah, there we go. Sharovnitsa, name to watch going into the future, I'm sure. Thanks for this brilliant introduction. Let's start the show.
I'm deeply impressed people were able to find them that quickly.
I am too, actually. And it's just one of those things, like, I never want to fuck up in public, because immediately the dumbest shit that I've ever done will get surfaced to the top.
People will find you.
I know. And they're like, and not only will they find me, but they'll find, like, a drunk tweet where I'm, like, talking about coming or something like that.
And then you'll be coming Joe Thrash and Kill for the rest of your life.
A local pervert outed on Twitter today.
There'll be pictures of you all over town.
Yeah, it's God, just it's me on the back of a donkey knocking over a birthday cake. local man ruins everything. let's step away from Sharovnitsa a little bit. When we recorded our show last week, we were kind of like, hey, I don't know what to do. Things are kind of strange. Let's do something a little bit silly. And then I feel like I got hit with like a few loads of bricks. I turned 33 last week. The night before my birthday, I saw that one of my favorite country musicians, Justin Townes Earl, he had died at the age of 38, and it just really like hung over my head in a strange way for a couple of days, and I couldn't quite get out of a funk. And then 2 days later, who is arguably one of the most influential young people in metal today, was found dead. We're talking, of course, about Riley from Power Trip. I mean, if you've ever held a conversation with me about metal, I've probably told you stories about seeing Power Trip or how much I love the band. There is no band that I have seen more times than Power Trip, starting in 2012, and I must have seen them somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 25 times in the years since. And it really fucking got me. I mean, it is just a huge, huge tragedy to lose someone who is so young and had been such a huge force for positivity within within metal, especially for creating a DIY movement for independent artists and for positive social change as well. And I'm still not entirely sure how to process that, Jordan.
It really is just a massive shock. In the music world, we've had some pretty big deaths over the past couple of years that were very surprising. Chris Cornell, Chester Bennington, and there's just big upswell of people talking about it and tweeting about it and just kind of reflecting. But seeing the response for Riley just in the moment of when people were learning it, in a way, at least, just because maybe we're more connected with metal people and seeing more of it, it was just everyone was talking about it and talking about how great Riley was and how much Power Trip's music meant to them and how much he as a person meant to them, people giving personal testimonials of meeting him and him checking up on people and just being a good person. I think just made it that much harder to kind of wrap your head around, and just he's not just a guy in a band, he was a person and meant something to a lot of people.
That's I think that's a thing. The band, they had worked their fucking asses off for a decade and brought them to a level where they're doing tours with the biggest legacy bands in metal. It was a matter of time before these guys were at the very top themselves. And that entire time, they were never once rock stars about anything. It was their movement was very much one of connecting with people on an individual level and elevating smaller bands so that they had an opportunity to continue making a name for themselves as well and making a positive change that way. If we want to talk about what you can do with DIY in this kind of scene, Power Trip is the finest example.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at a lot of newer bands that come out and occasionally it's featuring a member of, or it's produced by a member of this well-known band, and that kind of gives them a boost and their first album's on a major label. And that wasn't the case with Power Trip, really. They did it all themselves and got by and got through to people through their live performances, through touring relentlessly, and having music that had a lot of crossover appeal. Yeah, they could play Bloodstock Festival, but then they could also play This Is Hardcore Fest, and then they could also play a VFW, and would be appealing to thrash fans and death metal fans and hardcore fans and punk fans that, a lot of bands try to have kind of that, we sound a little bit metalcore, but we're kind of melodic and stuff like that, but it's not as much as appeal as they want it to be, but Power Trip has always had that.
Absolutely. And they cross over with normies too. That's such a rare thing to do with a band that didn't really make any overt grabs at accessibility. They
didn't have a gimmick.
They did not have a gimmick. And it's so fucking rare that something like that happens, that I feel in some ways I feel we saw this incredible movement, and it feels like it's kind of just been totally shut down, and I can't help but feel totally demoralized by this.
I guess for now you just kind of wait and see. Will the band continue? I would hope or assume that they have some other recorded material. Maybe they have enough to put something out posthumously. Do you try to replace them? Do other bands that are somewhere similar sounding or in the same scene try to step up and try to fill that void? I don't know. And we're kind of in the in-between period. It's websites trying to figure out can they do another Black Panther 2 or something like that? It's we don't know the answer right now. It's possible. Should they? I don't know. Will they? I don't know. Let's all just kind of take a step back and reflect and gather ourselves up and take it from there a couple months from now.
I think, I don't know, one of the great things about Riley, you know, he was like a force on stage. Like, he had an incredible presence to him. He was a great front man. He was never an especially great vocalist. He admitted that, like, he had never properly learned how to do, like, the harsh vocals thing. So I've had a couple of experiences of seeing the bands on multiple dates in a row when they were doing festivals here in town, where his voice would be completely blown out by the last day. And nobody cared, because it was great. He was fucking great at what he was doing.
Some people just have that presence and just have that gravitas, if you will, that even if they're not 100%, they can still give 100%. Like, I think a lot, a good comparison would be like Tony from Municipal Waste is kind of that same type of personality and energy on stage.
Definitely. Yeah, that's an apt comparison. And I mean, you had reposted the interview that we had done with Riley, and I hadn't listened to it since we did it, however many years ago it was. And man, that was actually a really difficult thing to listen to, especially in the first couple of minutes of it.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to repost that so people could get a chance to listen to it again. You know, we spoke to him about 3 years ago, and it's a really good interview, and I think it's kind of a window into what type of person he was, especially if you're, like, not super familiar with the band or haven't really heard about interviews from him, and just, like, his honesty and just ability to connect with people. Like, who are we? We're just two guys from a stupid-sounding website. But he still took an hour out of his day to talk to us and have in-depth conversations about music and about him and about, like, not wanting to play with certain bands that, like, don't fit in with their, like, politics and what they think about. And, you know, looking back on that 3 years from now, talking about sort of some of his personal struggles, and now, you know, you try not to connect any dots or make anything like that because, you know, nothing has been said, and the family and the band have asked for privacy, so you just kind of, like I said, you have to wait at this point and, you know, try not to jump any conclusions.
Yeah, it's I don't know, just look in the moment. I clicked play on this thing, and within like a minute I was like, I feel like an asshole. But it's unrelated. It's, you know, I hate to go on like this. I talk on this show all the time, like, you know, so celebrities don't know you, they don't matter, or whatever. It's just, it's different with this because it, you know, he's a real person in the scene. Like, it wasn't somebody that had just an insane amount of money and power. It was just a guy that worked every single fucking day.
Yeah, he's not a millionaire. He doesn't have offshore accounts. Wasn't around for 35 years in the public eye. Like I said, they're just guys. But that was part of the appeal and part of the charm, that you would be able to connect with them. There's no big leaguing it. There's no, yeah, I'll take a selfie with you later. See you later, nerd. It was like looking you in the eye and engaging with you and meaning everything you say.
I'm trying to imagine him doing the Doyle meet and
$50 meet and
greet. Yeah. And it's just so completely against who Riley was. And I don't really know what to say, man, but I am going to deeply, deeply miss seeing Power Trip every time that they came through town, which was often.
Yeah, I mean, I never got the chance. They might have come around once, I'm not even sure. But I'm sad I'm not able to experience what so many other people have and have, like, thoroughly enjoyed and recommended. You know, I can watch some YouTube videos and see people stage diving off balconies and stuff like that.
Yeah, for their record release for Nightmare Logic at a club here in town at the Mohawk, people were stage diving off the balcony into the lower level. one of our sight readers, Kit and I went to that show together. We met up with one of the sight readers who got his orbital bone broken in the pit.
But it was still a good time. Thumbs up as he's being carried off on a stretcher.
Exactly. Everyone had a great time. I took a former boss with me. He was interested in metal, but he wasn't really sure, you know, what to do with it. He was like, "I like Gwar, and I know that you like metal. What's a band that I can check out?" And I looked at a concert lineup. I saw, sure enough, that Power Trip was coming to town. So I told him, "Hey, come to the show with me." Power Trip was headlining the show. All of the bands that were playing were local punk bands. Like, when I say local punk bands, I mean like kids in high school with punk bands. it was one of the youngest crowds I've ever seen, and it was also the most insanely violent show I've ever seen. So my nerd boss is watching all of these teenagers just beat the shit out of each other.
There's something about being a high schooler at a metal concert that is just like zero regard for
your own life, anybody else's life. So my boss, who's a 40-year-old nerd, is like getting really nervous. You know, all of the bad beef went away when Power Trip went on. Everybody was just, you know, just headbanging, just moshing, just having a good time, no longer trying to maim their friends.
So was he a fan afterwards, or was that too much for him?
Absolutely. And that's the thing. That's awesome. If you took somebody to see a Power Trip show, especially if they had no idea about who they were or what they were going to see, they were going to walk away a fan.
I mean, those are the best bands. When you go in knowing nothing and you go out loving them.
That was my experience. I went to a club called Beerland here in town that holds maybe 50 people because I wanted to see Ringworm, and Power Trip opened up for them. And I probably haven't thought about Ringworm ever since because they were so completely destroyed by Power Trip.
But they have the Human Furnace.
Yeah. The Human Furnace was getting mad at the crowd after Power Trip played because people were like in a mood for violence. And he was like, "Hey, knock that shit off. Don't you kids know how to headbang?"
"Guys, stop fighting."
Which has stuck with me as one of the lamest things I've ever seen.
Well, I guess that night he was the human pilot light.
Exactly. and that's the thing. Like, I could tell you 20 different silly stories about seeing that band, or about how, like, when I went to see them at the indoor stage at the Mohawk, and some kids brought firecrackers.
Just to throw into the audience on stage.
They were in the audience, throwing them in the audience.
Great.
There was a sense of danger, I guess, with a lot of these shows where you wouldn't, unless you were, you know, our buddy that got his orbital bone broken, you wouldn't be seriously harmed, but there was a little bit of a sense of, like, what you were seeing was not totally restrained.
It wasn't Bad Luck 13 Riot Extravaganza.
It was not that. It was not. The vibes were not fucked like that.
It was positive, violent vibes.
Exactly.
Hey, I'm going to knock you in the eye, but then I'll pick you back up.
Exactly. Jesus, man. I don't know. I feel like it's weird doing this whole memory lane bullshit, but I loved this band. I really did, and I hope that our listeners out there, I hope that you had a chance to experience something similar. If you did, I'd like you to share your stories with us as well.
You know, at least you have some music to still listen to. There's interviews, there's videos, and hopefully there's some more stuff kind of laying out there that can be put out eventually.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if Pantera can put out a new song, whatever, 10 years later... You know, maybe there's hope for Power Trip as well.
Is that one? Was that Planet Piss?
Piss. What a reminder of your legacy.
I had forgotten about that.
This new song you've never heard it.
It's called Piss. No, I also saw like a member of the band had posted a couple of days ago, like, if you made an order for merch from our band after Riley died and you're already asking me where it is, I'm straight up canceling that shit. You are a massive scumbag if you do that kind of thing. I what the fuck is wrong with you?
I did see that. I think some of their albums like shot up charts because people bought them kind of en masse after the news came out. So hopefully that helps a little bit with whatever funeral costs and family costs the band have to deal with as well.
Yeah, man. I know that they have just like a huge network of people in Texas that would do literally anything they needed to help take care of that. So there is a network, and I hope that they're calling on him. The last show I saw before all of this got shut down was Power Trip's Festival.
That's right. Ugh. It's kind of all these ripple effects of things that are now going to be changed and affected because of this.
If I had to have a last show, I got to say that's a pretty good one.
That is a good one.
Well, I don't know how long I can kind of dwell on this and not feel totally fucked up about it, so...
I mean, I can give you something related to focus on that might... I don't want to bring the room down, but there was something that came out a couple days ago that's kind of stuck in my craw since seeing it.
All right, what's in your craw?
So, do you know who Greg Gutfeld is?
Is that the guy that had Red Eye on Fox?
He is. He had, for those of you who don't know, or maybe you've just seen clips, it was like a 2 a.m. show on Fox News called Red Eye, where... it wasn't really a political show. They might talk about some news of the day, but it was most well known for having like Odorous Urungus from GWAR on, or Andrew WK on, or Buzz, actually I'm a Republican, Osborne from the Melvins.
Yeah, I've never watched the show because I have no occasion to ever watch Fox News at 2 a.m., or anytime really, but I've seen a number of clips over the years. There is that classic clip of Andrew WK mm-hmm. making an aggrieved face at Greg every time he talks.
So yeah, he had that show for a while, and I think that kind of gave people an opinion of him that, oh, he's not so bad. Yeah, he's on Fox, but whatever. And in recent years, he's been on like more mainstream Fox shows, like I think The Five was one of them, where they just get a bunch of chuckleheads to kind of yell at each other, and then everyone turns on the quote liberal of the group, Juan Williams. So, you know, 4 or 5 angry middle-aged white people can yell at the brown man.
I can't believe that Juan Williams willingly took the Alan Colmes role.
People forget about Alan Colmes. It's just the sacrificial lamb of Fox News, so they can wink and nod when they say they're fair and balanced. Like, I mean, we have one.
Yeah, Alan Colmes is synonymous with cuck in my brain, dude. You willingly put yourself into this shot.
I mean, they're labeled as liberals, but I mean, even then, that's not fair to liberals. These people are like centrist at best.
Yeah, agreed.
So because Greg Gutfeld has been involved in metal, has been connected to metal, apparently likes it, he wore a Power Trip shirt on Fox News a couple days ago and gave kind of a heartfelt tribute to Riley after his passing. And that doesn't necessarily bother me. Fine, you had some sort of relationship that I suppose that's very nice of you. You didn't have to do that, especially for not a particularly well-known band outside of our little metal circle. What kind of bothered me is people within the metal world praising him for this. I think there was one well-known website, you know, I don't really want to call them out, so let's just call them Lamb Goat, tweeted out the video and said, can't say I'm the biggest Fox News fan, but this tribute from Greg Gutfeld today was great. And it bothers me because he's not a good person.
No, he's a very bad person, actually.
Despite liking some metal and giving a little bit of the dap to them, to these bands, he's still a Fox News personality. He still says awful, horrible things. I mean, I could run through a couple right now after quick Googling. PolitiFact, QAnon hoax has been linked to violence. Fox News' Greg Gutfeld falsely claims it hasn't. Let's see. When on an edition of The Five, when they were talking about this recent the murders that were happening in Wisconsin from the 17-year-old kid, when he was talking to Juan Williams, he said that protests had abdicated responsibility over the matters to militias and defenders of property. Because once the police are not allowed to act, the rioting can proceed without consequence. People come in and fill the void. And he's saying this while wearing a Power Trip shirt. Now, do you think Riley would agree with that?
No, and as a matter of fact, I'm getting a little fucking livid about this one, man.
Media Matters just has a bunch on him, like, saying horrible things about women. Just being, like, super misogynist. And it's just like, yeah, there you go. You Google Greg Gutfeld racist. There's articles from all over talking about him shouting down Juan Williams when talking about race issues in America. And just on Twitter, within the past 24 hours, following further protests in Portland where Trump supporters shot paintballs at protesters and attacked them and leaving one of supposedly Trump supporter dead. We'll see what the story is on that. He tweeted out, "We now know there is a plan to burn our homes. They're telling us that. So, what do we do? If we fight back, we are called vigilantes, and that's illegal. It's a perfect recipe for war. No mayors, no leaders, no protection. What do we do?" Now, why would you want to promote a person that is saying inflammatory things in which real people have been injured and killed because he said some nice things about a band you like?
I just like to note that, you know, lots of people like bands that I like. For example, my next door neighbor, who is a fucking Nazi, likes a lot of metal bands that I like. That doesn't mean that I have anything in common with him.
And it doesn't mean you have to promote him. You don't have to be like, well, you know, we don't agree on a lot of things, but Bill was a good dude.
Not true.
And it's just, you'd never see this on the flip side. You'd never see, like, Laura Ingraham saying, you know, I don't agree with Cornel West a lot, but he said some nice things after Ted Nugent accidentally shot his dick off while jerking off.
Yeah. Never gonna happen. And, God, it's fucking killing me. This thing that I've been fearing for years, this threat of sectarian civil war that appears to be just, like, inevitable at this point, is being flared up by this fucking asshole wearing the shirt of a band that means so much to me.
Flared up and normalized.
Yeah.
Like, as of right now, the Lamgo tweet has almost 200 retweets and almost 1,000 likes. And they didn't need to do that.
Don't be a fucking sucker.
Thank you. That's a good way of putting it. You're promoting a bad person because you have the tiniest amount of common ground.
Yeah.
I mean, you could see this and think to yourself, or like say to the person next to you in the room, you know, here's a nice tribute from someone who sucks. Like, that's fine. You don't got to play up this person. If you have to qualify with, I'm not a big fan of Fox News, or, you know, we don't agree on everything, you should probably stop.
Definitely. That's a good rule of thumb, man.
Someone can just suck, and you don't have to help them out at all.
I mean, you and I just talked about this yesterday on the bonus show that we recorded, but
Patreon.com/toiletofhell.
Yeah, patreon.com/toilet. Yeah, that's what it is. This thing that I was worried about yesterday, it's getting worse.
Yeah, it took less than 24 hours for it to get worse from our discussion.
Yeah, we got off the call. A couple hours later, I look at Twitter and I see that there's a caravan of people coming into Portland from the exurbs with all of their giant trucks with their Trump flags, and everybody was encouraged to carry weapons. And then, in only a little bit amount of time, I see video of these guys rolling through intersections with people in between them, macing people from their trucks, shooting people from their trucks with paintball guns, And then what appeared to be somebody confronting another person and then winding up dead. All of this has been whipped up into a frenzy for years. It's getting worse now. And I don't know what to tell anybody that's listening to the show. You're probably in some way sympathetic to the things that we say, but things are not safe and they are not going to get any safer.
And don't let the enablers get away with stuff like this. Don't let them normalize these things. Don't let the people in power get away with, well, I haven't seen it, or, you know, it's just defending rights and, you know, well, let's wait for the investigations to happen. No, don't let them get away with it. Don't let them make this just another talking point or a thing that happened. It's just, it's like, it reminds me a lot of, like, Holocaust deniers. There's the ones who just flat out say it didn't happen, and everyone ignores them because it did. It obviously did. It's the people that are like, well, you know, we do think it happened, but it was really communists that did it, and it was really these other factors that happened. And it really wasn't 6 million Jewish people there. We think it was 180, and they were mostly political. It's that normalization, and it's that, like, trying to actualize and meet common ground and, like, not sound as crazy and trying to sound reasonable. And that's how they managed to pull susceptible people over to their side. And it's the same thing with this. Oh, I don't watch Fox News, but you know what? Greg Gutfeld was wearing a Power Trip show. Next time I'm flipping channels, maybe I'll listen a little bit more. Hey, that doesn't sound so bad. Maybe I'll sign up for his podcast. Oh, it's recommended to also listen to Ben Shapiro. Maybe I'll listen to that too. And it goes on and on and on. But it could stop when you just don't promote it in the first place.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I guess I've been threatened by internet weirdos for years. These right-wingers want to basically hunt leftists for sport. And it appears that they're going to go ahead and go through with that thing that they've been fantasizing about for a long time. And
they are horny to kill you, me, and our listeners.
Exactly. And I think that a lot of people see something that is fucking horrifying on its face, even more horrifying if you think about it, what that entails for a little while. And I just want to say there are sides. They have been drawn. The sides are drawn, and you have to choose now. You can't sit on the sideline.
Now is the time for me to rise to my feet.
If not us, then who? As Riley would have said.
Perseverance.
So, I apologize, everybody, for bringing the room down even further, but I just kind of had to say something there, so...
We could end on a good note if you want.
Let's please do that. Anything.
Slayer's coming back.
Ah, god damn it.
It's Slayer with a little asterisk next to their name. Because, as we predicted, you can go back and listen to these shows that we've talked about. Slayer, with their, like, two-year-long retirement tour. Paul Bostaph says his new project with Kerry King, quote, will sound like Slayer without it being Slayer.
Slayer BC? Slayer Jr.?
It might as well be. During an interview, Bostaph says, I guess the best way to put it is Kerry writes what he writes. Is this going to be a rock and roll record? No. Is it going to be what you want it to be? Yes.
That's debatable.
Sure, dude. Is it going to be what you expect it to be? Yes. I appreciate the honesty. It's not going to be some rehashed stuff. You're contradicting yourself.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's going to sound like Slayer without it being Slayer, but not intentionally so. Probably because Kerry can't write anything else. I mean, Kerry's been writing songs in Slayer his entire career, and he has a style. And that style, as a songwriter, you just don't change your style because your band is done. But that's what you love to write. Are things going to maybe morph over time? Yeah, I would imagine so. I don't think the first song Kerry wrote as a kid is the same as the last song he wrote for Repentless. Songwriters do change over time based on their influences and how they feel at the time. Kerry's on fire right now, so all I have to say is if you like heavy music and you like Slayer, you'll like this. Is it going to be Slayer? It's not going to be Slayer. Slayer's done. They're retired. the thing about it is that we don't want to sound like Baby Slayer, you know what I mean? There is Slayer, but it's going to be good. It's going to be really good. I've been listening to the music, and I just cannot wait to get into the room and start jamming with Carrie. So it's going to be Slayer, but it's not going to be Slayer.
Yeah, this is a pretty mealy-mouthed statement from this fella. He's trying to convince himself of something that is just not true.
I think Slayer fans are fine with that. I mean, the band hasn't really evolved much in their 30 years, except for like the one time they tried to, and it was just like a new metal album that no one really talks about anymore.
I think about Diabolus and Musica more than I should.
That's because our brains are rotten and we have to focus on the ridiculous things. I mean, I'm super guilty about that.
Fair. No, I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of the lineup. I bet if they could get somebody on vocals and bass, like, I don't know, Tom Araya, they would really be onto something.
It's funny you bring that up because there was also an article about Kerry King's wife, Aisha, on Instagram had actually like weighed in. I guess someone had commented on it, and she said, "No Tom, no Slayer, Carrie. Stop thinking Slayer without Tom Araya. Don't worry, they'll be never Slayer again. They'll never be Slayer again. You can rest easy." So I guess the line is right now that it's essentially going to be Slayer, just under a different name and without Tom Araya, which is pretty much expected.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm holding her to that there will never be a Slayer again, because I just don't believe that's true.
No, I still fully expect them for Tom Araya to come in at some point. But in the meantime, we're going to get Slayer BC, we're going to get Kerry King's Hell Awaits, whatever it is. They'll probably do a tour of like classic Slayer songs, and then they'll put out an album that's just Slayer light with a different vocalist, or maybe even no vocals. Maybe an instrumental Slayer album, which would be somewhat interesting.
It would be interesting. I don't think it would be terribly good.
Probably not. It would be a lot of just the squealies and the dive bombs. But I'd give them points for trying. Like, who would fit in that role? Just like another former Exodus vocalist somewhere in there?
Yeah, that's what it is. Like, these guys only have two friends.
Gary Holt's going to join them. Get whoever on bass. Who's a bassist that like plays in a bunch of different bands that they could just pluck out? Troy from Mastodon?
Yeah, that'd work. I got a blind spot with bassists. They're not real.
It doesn't matter. You'll get Robert Trujillo on bass. There you go.
Yeah, that'll work. He's probably too rich for this shit now.
He's probably too good for being a man. The one thing I did want to point out that made me chuckle is that Kerry King's wife, her Instagram handle is @SlayerWhore.
Wow. That's incredible.
Go for it.
It's one of those things, man. The world changes in scary and unpredictable ways, but you will always have Kerry King playing the same riff.
He does one thing and he does it well.
Yeah, sure. It's his thing.
I can't do it, so good on him for being able to do it.
As things change and get different, you know, you might have trouble finding like household items that you previously could get with ease at the grocery store, but you'll always be able to buy a Slayer t-shirt.
I still can't get my jarred marinara sauce I like 6 or 7 months into this quarantine stuff.
The grocery store has not had my favorite sparkling water in months now, and I'm planning on a violent protest.
It's so frustrating because they have like other jars of the same brand, but I don't want any of those. I want the kind I like. She's like, no, we don't have it anymore. Go to their website. You know, we apologize for any delays. She's like, no, just make that sauce. Stop it. Make my bubbly water.
Yeah, I'm a little baby that just wants to be pacified with household goods. Pacify me.
You want the things you like that comfort you. I mean, I got a SodaStream a couple, like, 2-3 weeks before all of this went down, and it has saved me lots of trips of going to the store to get seltzer.
God, I should have probably done that years ago.
I mean, all you have to do is when you finish the canister, you can go to a Target and just trade it for another one for like $15.
Nice. Damn, I've wasted thousands of dollars on bubbly water.
Same. And I mean, environmentally, you save on plastic bottles, recycling them too.
To be fair, I buy the cans. I'm an aluminum man.
I'll drink from the cans. Some brands sometimes taste like the can, and that's a bit of a drinky turnoff.
Yeah. I feel that. I feel that.
This has been Seltzer Talk with Joe and Jordan.
You know, it's fucking Topo Chico got bought by Coca-Cola, and now a case of Topo Chico is like twice the price. And it's not acceptable. Also, Topo Chico is going to be releasing a spiked variety of boozy Topo Chico.
Unnecessary.
Yeah, Coca-Cola done ruined the best brand in Texas. All right, well, we'll have to talk about sparkling water a little bit more in depth on the next episode.
We'll drink with our pinkies up.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that you think we ought to tack on to this one?
I think this has been a little bit of a heavy one, so we can kind of ride on out into the sunset and make sure people follow us on Twitter at Joe Thrash and Kill at 365 Days of Horror. You could always email us, toiletofhellradio@gmail.com and patreon.com/toiletofhell if you want to give us a little cash for some bonusy stuff.
Yeah, do all those things. And like I said earlier in the episode, if you have some stories you'd like to share, please put them in the comments, or you can email us as well. I would really like to see those.
Yeah, definitely. And you can email them to us as well. And, you know, if we get enough, maybe we could read them on next week's show.
Yeah, that'd be great. Folks, I feel like I say this a lot, but please be safe. Please take care of each other. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.